IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 99 of the Killing It Podcast. Luckily, we have this editor so we can like put you two together.
Hey, we were on time this time, but we just had a pause as we both waited.
We could do that again.
We had the whole countdown thing, and I was like ready to go, and then this thing shows up 5, 4. I'm like, what? Huh?
This is playing, but look, things are completely the same. Ryan's in a warm spot, and it's still snowing for me. It's just another storm.
See, I was feeling bad today that there was a cloud, and man, I will tell you, that cloud, it actually had like gray in the middle of it, and it was like, it was thick enough it might actually produce some rain, and everybody was paying attention and pointing it out at breakfast and like, hey, did you see the cloud? And I was like, you know, I have found my spirit location, because that is exactly the way I would like to interact with weather.
I was so desperate last night. I was looking for a plate, like, because it's the long week. We're recording right before the long holiday weekend, right? And there's an extra day, and so Sharon and I were kicking around the, like, you know what? The snow band ends like an hour south of us. Maybe we can get far enough away. And everything became difficult on the, like, well, I can get to Myrtle Beach in 6 hours of driving, but it's rainy there. Oh. So what if I get stuck inside in a, like, I'm just trading a hotel, my house for a hotel indoors. That's not the point. I wanted to be able to walk around. And if it's all rainy, like, I'm completely stuck. I cannot get away from this bad weather. I cannot do it.
Well, it's too bad you don't want to make the effort to drive all the way down to Florida. They have beaches.
Yeah, but no thank you to Florida. I believe in science, and clearly the state doesn't. So no thank you.
No Florida man for you.
That's a statement that applies in about 11 different scenarios. No thank you to Florida. You can choose, pick and choose where you want to apply that. There are many applications of that statement.
I've got a friend that recently bought a new house, and they have a pool, and she posted up a picture of these ducks that landed in the pool, and everybody responded, no, you don't want ducks. And so she bought, I've never seen this before, a floating alligator head and put it in the pool, and it keeps the ducks away.
I totally want one for my hot tub. Totally want one.
So now I know what to do if I ever have ducks I don't want. So,
well, fair enough.
See, for every problem, there is a solution. And when you can be creative about it, hey, I salute these people.
Absolutely.
Well, we are brought to you this week by our friends at Acronis. Are you still relying on a frustrating patchwork of legacy solutions? Modernize your cybersecurity and data protection with Acronis CyberProtect Cloud. It's a single solution that combines backup, anti-malware, and endpoint protection management. As an MSP, you can easily improve client security posture, eliminate complexity, and generate more recurring revenue. Learn more about Acronis CyberProtect Cloud at acronis.com. So I'm going to kick us off because it was too funny not to highlight this one. One of our premises here, or ideas and concepts, is the idea of deconstructing the terms that we use. And I could not resist this Tech Central article. Here's the quote: digital business infrastructure operations, or DBIO, is an end-to-end approach to delivering managed services. It spans the entire digital value chain from the core to the edge and is supported by robust network and security infrastructure. DBIO, boys. Have we found one that, like, does this one matter?
So my first quick comment is, as a person who is prone to saying buzzwords, I doff my cap to you, sir. That was a very impressive application of all the buzzwords.
Yes, let's stir it all together into a buzzword cocktail.
I like to say it's fully buzzword compliant.
Oh.
D-B-I-O. And the funny thing is that this is one of these things that if three people say it, it will then make its way into the magazines, and then people are going to use it as if everybody knows. And then nobody defines it.
Oh, my God, the three of us have said it. The three of us have said it. Stop.
Well, so I see I was speaking on stage at a conference, 3 years ago, and somebody said, we were having an open discussion. Audience could submit topics and we would answer them with a panel of experts. And one of the topics was, what is the proper and most accurate terminology for describing what we do? And there were six different options. And my only answer was, who freaking cares? Like, I literally do not care whether you call yourself, well, I would say, please don't call yourself the standard acronym that everybody else calls themselves, because from a branding and distinctiveness point of view, that's the opposite of a unique selling proposition. I'm one of those, like everybody else, is probably a bad
marketing
spin.
What's funny is that the part of the problem here is the D in DBIO is digital. Like that, which seems so straightforward, has actually lost a lot of its meaning, right? I mean, digital transformation is bad enough, you know, nothing personal, Brian. But,
yes.
But, you know, what does it mean when you call everything digital versus analog business operation, right?
Right. I mean, and this pains me because I like the idea. Right. The idea they're trying to convey is this idea of, look, you've got to actually look at all of the components and you've got to make sure you're delivering some kind of value. But, and I get it. And it's related to, you know, building on a core of a proper network, proper security. And then you're focused on this whole end to end delivery and you're linked to the business. So I love all of this. But it's like, wow, we can just make a word cocktail to take a good concept and completely make it unusable.
Well,
no, thank you.
And it is a kind of a sense of, wait a minute, with that, you know, I would call like a word salad. You've got all these nice words, but what's the big picture? Is it literally that this is a holistic view of a solution that makes people's businesses more profitable and more efficient? Those are good words. We could use those.
Well, see, and that's the thing, right? There are many words. We can all choose our favorites and still wind up back at the place where we didn't answer the question that Dave always asks, why do we care? Because why do we care? See, if I take them literally and I deconstruct their description of themselves, well, my first reaction is, oh, so you don't deal with the end user device. You don't deal with any client devices. You're not actually dealing with any input. You're just digital business infrastructure. Oh, well, I meant all of the systems. Well, my laptop's not infrastructure, thank you very much. There's a reason that word means something significantly architecturally different, and we have to be careful with that. I fear that what they're doing in this particular scenario is what happens in a lot of like technology vendor marketing stuff. They want it to sound important. Therefore, they use big words as opposed to just, you know, why not just tell them what it's for?
Well, and, right. And, you know, my first impression of this is I like the backwards view of like, let's start with solutions and figure out what we need, which is opposed to let's start with, I need you to buy a server and some workstations and, you know, a network switch, and right, which starts with stuff. And then we sell that to people, whether they need it or not, right? Clearly, the solution focus is a better focus. I'm not sure that we need a different word. And I suspect a piece of this, on just strictly from the wordplay perspective, is to keep the lawyers away, right? Because if you say this is robust network security infrastructure, what does robust mean? Well, I built you a very robust infrastructure, so please don't sue me, right?
Versus, yeah, instead of word salad, just use garlic. That solves the problem. Right. And, you know, again, and plus, you know, doesn't every vendor on the planet want you to sell their widget? That's why, like, so get out of that. You, again, don't overthink this stuff. My big takeaway for this whole discussion is, look, if you're having to put this many pieces of words together to create a monstrosity, describe it another way. This is not worth it. So I'll include the link if you'd like to dig into it. The concept I'm on board with, but please, no thank you for this
word. And see, my final observation on it is, you know who it will work for, unfortunately, is all those non-technical business decision makers from the other side of the aisle who have not spent the last 25 years becoming annoyed at the acronyms that we use to describe the inner workings of our industry. There are probably some CFOs out there who are saying a lot of digital transformation things without understanding what that means. And they're going to see an acronym like this and go, ooh, well, these guys get it.
So I just decided I'm going to start up a DBIO certification program. And if you would like the DBIO certified link on your website, just send me some money.
I got money for that. All right. Well, enough of that.
All right.
That's excellent, right? So we spend a lot of time in this podcast discussing not just what is happening, but what will happen in the future. In the last year, for those of you that have been with us through all of this pandemic process, we've spent a lot of time talking about not just predictions for the future, but in a post-pandemic world, what will sustain and what was just a flash in the pan, a temporary adaptation. We've come across some stuff, and one of them that we want to highlight here to begin with is the newsletter article from our friend Jay McBain talking about his 10 predictions about what is coming for the channel in 2021. Now, we don't have time, obviously, to go through all of these, and if you work in this industry, God bless Jay McBain. I think you might have already read this thing because he's done a phenomenal job of putting the word out and starting a good conversation. During this one, I think we're going to pick and choose a couple of what we think are some of the big ideas and some of the like the lasting trends. And I'm gonna pick two, and then just I want to hear you guys' reactions to these two and then what else you took away from it. One of them is the observation that subscriptions are now, and the channel is not ready to adapt to that business model. And the second is that ecosystem and community matters more than channel program. Now, there's a lot of other stuff that goes around those. Those are the two that I thought were actionable and really going to impact our audience here that listens. What are you guys' thoughts on Jay's thoughts here on 10 big ideas for the future?
Well, I got to say, I'm a big believer that the subscriptions are, in fact, not just the present, but also the future. But one of the things that I think people have trouble with, you know, as I go and make presentations around the world back in the day, is I'm a big believer in the bundle. And a lot of people still think all this stuff needs to be sold separately. And so I think they get the idea that they can sell a subscription to Office 365, for example, but they haven't figured out that there's way more money if they bundle that with a whole bunch of services. And so in some ways, it sort of weakens the argument a bit about subscriptions because they want to sell the subscriptions, but they're selling them the wrong way. And maybe that's what Jay means by them like not getting it.
I'm gonna borrow from Professor Scott Galloway because I like his phraseology of this. It's not just the bundle, it's the rundle, the recurring revenue bundle, which is too distinct from a product bundle that you buy.
Right.
So his phraseology for this is a rundle, i.e. that recurring revenue. I mean, like, I've been thinking a lot about the way people buy and acquisition and marketing around that, and I think Jay is completely right on the subscription consumption bit. And I think he's right. There's a lot of people that are still implementers or still thinking about these in disparate pieces that are not truly ready to embrace what that purchase of a true rundle is, as opposed to I sell my services on a contractual basis. There is a difference between the two. The one that highlighted me is the other one, Ryan, that you mentioned is this idea of influencers and community-driven marketing being so much more important. You know, as three talking heads, right? like here you have three guys who literally spend their time thinking about being influencers. I'm kind of going like, yeah, of course. But I look around and people don't understand oftentimes the power of that style of engagement and don't turn enough towards their own customers. For me, the other feedback that I would give on this is I think too many portions of IT services are inward facing in these communities versus outward facing, meaning going talking to their own customers. I don't need to spend, if I'm an MSP, if I'm an IT services company, I don't need to spend so much of my time talking to other IT services company. I need to talk in the communities of my potential customers.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting. One of the things that's happening, all of us are influencers, but there are people who get paid to be influencers when they reach a certain level. And I think there's a lot of MSPs who put out some amazing stuff, but they don't do it in a conscious way to become influencers for their clients. Like you could totally see somebody saying, hey, Cleveland, you know, this is the technology show, and, you know, building an audience specifically around that. And I'm not sure why that hasn't just evolved on its own yet.
Well, and I think it's a question of packaging and of promotion and of marketing, right? The three of us live this enough that we know you didn't just wake up one day and go, podcast, that sounds neat. Let's go do that. No, there's infrastructure, there's promotion, there's a whole enterprise that revolves around this activity. And I think a lot of people aren't that disciplined to be able to pull it off, but their words matter. And I'm going to take that word influencer quite literally. And I'll go back to one of the things we learned many years ago when we are selling. If you're trying to sell something to a business decision maker, the first question you should ask yourself is, whose advice do they already take seriously? And then how can I get that individual to introduce me to the decision maker, right? So if I am a technology services provider company and I am trying to influence the owner of a 50-person organization, who does that person already listen to? His accountant, his lawyer, his property manager, right? Now, I'm not going to go to that person, start a fresh conversation with that business decision maker and try to convince them that the idea of technology managed services is valuable and worth their time to pay attention to. My better approach from a sales point of view is to approach that person's CPA and say, do you realize the financial risk that you are putting yourself at by not doing ABC? You know what? That's a huge problem. And as your CPA, I'm going to need you to do something about that. By the way, you don't know how to solve that problem. That's okay. I know a guy. Talk to Dave. You can actually solve that problem. The influencer approach, right? Our friends at Microsoft taught us this, I will say, 2 decades ago when they did a big presentation at one of the worldwide partner conferences where they said the channel of the future included digital advertising agencies. And all the resellers in the world freaked out and went, the hell? Why would you be introducing another competitor to our channel? And they said, I don't do what a digital ad agency does. That's not my competition. And the question is not, do they do what you do? The question is, the people who sign your checks, do they listen to a digital advertising agency? And would they, and if that digital advertising agency came in and said, you can't run this campaign, you can't win that many new customers, you don't have enough bandwidth, at which point they're going to go, crap, we got to upgrade our network.
So
I think that's answering the question.
Put a pin in this, and then we'll just quickly introduce topic number 3 because it's related, and then we'll come back and talk about both of these at the same time. So topic number 3 is a different view of, the future, looking at the future and some analysis of that. And it comes from Tech Aisle, which the first thing that really struck me is it's even more jargony, right? It's not as jargony as DBIO, but it's far more jargony than Jay. But the article that we're going to point to is about 10 SMB and mid-market predictions for 2021. And so one of the things that really struck me here is that Number two is the quest for reinvention, innovation, and resiliency will drive bursts of incremental transformation goals. So I think that's true, because to me, my analysis of what happened in 2020 and why not everybody is going to go stay at home is that we have these bursts where change takes place. And I think we've been overdue for probably 5 years for lots of massive change to take place. And 2020 and the pandemic was an opportunity for a lot of that to get thrown on the heap. But I'm a believer there's going to be lurches forward and then a whole bunch of people retreat back. And so I think, you know, I'm not sure exactly how I would, you know, invest or not invest in commercial real estate in big cities, but I think there will be an influence. I just don't know if it's going to be massive or if it's just going to be a spurt all at once.
So Anurag is fantastic at creating word salad, but the difference on his is that he actually makes big punches, which is why I like his writing.
Right.
I'm with you on that one. For me, I liked his number one headline, which was digital inequality will be more important than the digital divide. And because I'm spending a lot of time thinking about the ability of different people to be connected and the ability to do that transformation, both on a skills level and management. There's so many elements to this. And there was an interesting study I just covered on Business of Tech, where they looked into, was technology the driver of innovation? And the ultimate answer is that it's not about the new shiny. It's about the investment in people and culture to use the technology. You don't need a bleeding edge, cutting edge technology. You just have to embrace the tech you have. Now, it may be an advanced tech and you embrace it, but it can also be basic tools that if you heavily invest in, you do well. And so the point here is there really is the ability to invest in your people and your process to unlock this stuff. Oh, and by the way, those providers that invest in things like training your end customers are going to deliver way higher results.
See, better technology and tools will always empower you to accomplish advancements in innovation in technology, advancements in business model, advancements in working arrangements. The tools will make you more capable, but you still have to do the work. Right. Like, you know, what's the old lyric from a Matis Yahoo song? I'm going to go all reggae on you people. His old lyric was the rabbi can tell you where to dig and what to dig for, but the digging you must do yourself. Right. You actually have to use the tools effectively. And I believe shelfware and that kind of purchased but unutilized technical capability has always been a hallmark of our industry. I will sell you 99 units of capability, and you will consume and effectively utilize 33 of them, and then you'll get bored and distracted and whatever. And I don't care, because you paid me for all 99, and then, you know, that's okay. I'll come back next year and tell you the tool you're bored with is outdated and I need to upgrade you to the next version. Software industry has been selling vaporware and shelfware for decades,
right?
And our customers are getting pissed about
it. Well, and it's kind of, actually, that leads into one of my other favorites in this Tech Aisle article is about security and risk mitigation. They say it's going to focus on the safe middle ground. And I think we've already seen that, right? There are people who say, you know, here, just go adopt CMMC or don't go adopt NIST and all is well. And, you know, and I think you should do that. But my argument is that's the minimum, right? That's like the core. You know, my new approach to security is there can't be variables in security. The only variable is how much is included in managed services and how much do you pay for on top of that. But you don't get to say, oh, sorry, you can't afford to be secure. That's not an option, right?
Yeah, exactly. I salute that times 100. And it goes back to, Dave, your comment earlier. Whatever it is, it's not what you are selling. It is how you are selling. And then that will impact the business model that you're going to adopt or going forward. The Rundle is the way of the future because something like security is not a set it and forget it. It's not a one and done type of a thing. It's evergreen as a requirement. Therefore, it needs to be evergreen as a compensation model. And I'll go back to that one from Jay's list. And we've been doing a big project with a big customer talking about the idea of adapting to SaaS and subscription. And I often make the comment to them because they are product people, right? Those of us that have lived in the managed services marketplace for the last 20 years, we look at that shift to subscription business model and we chuckle and go, how quaint. Isn't that such an old-fashioned thing? We all learned how to get onto recurring revenue years and years and years ago. It's already a solved problem. Well, I'm here to tell you from a research point of view, as well as a real experience point of view, better than 80% of companies in the channel have no clue, no compensation plan, and no cash flow to make the shift to subscription selling. And if they do not figure that out before the end of calendar 2021, they're going to be dinosaurs and get disrupted by a new competitor who says all the same stuff, no upfront payments, convenient monthly fee. If you don't learn how to do that, and again, managed service provider goes, oh yeah, I know how to do that. Do you know how to do that?
Do you really?
Do you know how to do that for software? Do you know how to do that for consulting? If you do not know how to sell everything on convenient monthly payments and motivate your sales dudes to do that, and know how to manage the working capital and cash flow around that. It's 2021 and I'm blown away.
Perfect example of that. Know-how. I think very, very few MSPs are selling managed print services. And that's been around for a long time. And it just, for whatever reason, people don't feel like they want to sell it. So they don't.
It's funny you bring up the managed print services, and I will give a little exposure to the conversation that I have, because somebody did just recently pitch me on talking more about managed print services. I freely admit my bias of yawn. I have no interest in printers. Now, that said, you're not wrong. But I will say that the reason I'm not interested in it is not that I don't think it's a good opportunity. It's just that I feel like it's explored territory in that space understands it. I.e., like there's a model for it. There's a way to deploy it. There's vendors that are doing that. I would agree with you that there are solution providers that haven't done it. My personal interest is like, oh, I don't feel like I'm crossing any new ground on this.
Well, you're only crossing new ground in terms of market adoption and financial reward because, yes, the model exists. And yes, the technology is mature and fully baked. And the margins are higher than almost anything you do in the product world. And it just continues to churn. Someday with another beer in our hands, I will give you all my conversion story to the world of managed print services. It happened a long, long time ago, and I am a devout conversion person into the world of managed print services. So
okay, so then I'm gonna in the interest of since we're going off on this one, but you don't lead with it, right? It's just embedded into the overall piece, right?
Oh, no.
The whole technology solution.
Crawl, walk, run. Get a foot in the door, right? Land and expand. Any of those cliches that we can use to describe the world of recurring revenue, it begins with, I'm not here to solve your most important problem. I'm here to solve whatever you are willing to pay me to do first.
Well,
and then I'm going to do it well and get paid again and again and again. And often I will say, for all the complicated things we argue with our customers about, no, let me be your IT department. Well, that's disruptive. That's threatening. You know what? While you're thinking about that, how would you like it if you just literally never again had to think the word toner in your job as an IT professional? I'll just take that off your hand. Don't worry about it. It's my first foot in the door. It's one of the most efficient land and expand vectors that a managed service provider will ever deploy.
So this is interesting because I want to take us back to Jay's article, because one of the things he talked about is the rise of the direct consumer, right, or direct to client. And print services is a perfect example. Managed service providers have failed to get on this train, and Epson is now on the radio marketing direct to businesses. Right, buy the printer. It comes with the first year's worth of refills, and you know then we can talk. And it's not, we'll have you talk to Ryan. No. Well, yeah, if you just come back to us. So
trust me, Xerox.com, HP.com, you can get that from a direct perspective any day. And it's a recurring revenue element for a consumable service that is evergreen. And they're going to come back in and offer all the other services and disrupt you from your customer
base.
So
the closing then thought is, well, sometimes Dave is very wrong. Don't always listen to me.
Oh, sometimes no. I'm
very wrong.
See, the bottom line has tons of predictions that we've been talking about today. Please pay attention to the future of the industry. Everybody who's listening to us right now, you don't have to agree with all of these predictions, but you should be, as I call it, professionally curious about what you do for a living, to think about what's coming down the road, or else you will be the dinosaur.
And sadly, we're out of time, but I will note, it took 99 episodes for Dave to be wrong.
You got that going for you. More often than I'm wrong.
It didn't take me anywhere near that.
And that will do it for episode 99 of the
Killing It
podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.